Hello and welcome to Developmental Service Ontario's podcast. I'm your host, Kathy Sampaio-Lipiani, DSO Communications Supervisor. For many adults with developmental disabilities and their caregivers, figuring out housing options for themselves or a loved one can be very challenging. Many people don't know where to begin, what's available, or how to develop a housing plan. Today's podcast is going to help you explore and understand housing needs and wants so that you can get started on your house planning journey. In the studio with me today are DSO Housing Toolkit experts, Tracy Gerard, who is a housing navigator for both DSO Northern and Northeast Region, and Amber Armstrong, who is the housing navigator for DSO Central West Region. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having us, Kathy.
So I guess the purpose of the podcast is really to help individuals listen to and get more information on sort of the housing, where do I go, how do I start and begin the process. I think a lot of individuals don't know where to go and where they can get help because it's such a big need. Mm-hmm. And so your role is really a new role and something that will be of interest to families to help figure out how can I get additional help to find and understand the housing journey. Mm-hmm. So I guess if we could begin with a little bit about yourselves and you can kind of give us a little, or the listener, a sort of an understanding of who you are and where you come from.
Sure. So I'm Tracy and I've been in the developmental service sector for close to 30 years. I've spent my career assisting people to experience the best lives that they can. And so it was just in February of last year that I transitioned over to Developmental Services Ontario as a housing navigator. And since that time, I've been working really hard on pulling those resources together for families, meeting with people, explaining my role to them and how I might help in the development of their housing plan or their loved ones' housing plans. Mm-hmm.
I'm Amber, and I'm the navigator for DSO Central West Region. For the last 8 years, I have been an employment support worker for Community Living Burlington. So I do that half the time. The other half the time, I'm the housing navigator. So I have a little bit of a different background where I've kind of been doing this role for a little over 3 years now. Back in 2014, Community Living North Halton was awarded a grant, a Trillium grant, to hire a coordinator to do this very job. And it was just for the Halton region. And it was recognized as being needed as it filled a gap for families. And I guess I was a natural person to approach when the role with the DSO came forward. So, yeah.
So Amber, tell me a little bit about the role of the DSO navigator. What does that look like and what can you provide families?
Well, basically, the first thing I would say is that we provide hope and encouragement. Because let's face it, up until this point, with there not being any formal funding, you know, coming down the pipeline that we're aware of, families are quite can be discouraged and disgruntled that the wait for a ministry-funded option is so long. So we're here to provide encouragement, but also to be realistic about what the future may look like, and to really help families set up a plan forth to create their own individualized housing option that does not rely on ministry funding. So in a way, I kind of joke sometimes that we're like cheerleaders, but I guess we're personal motivators to really let families know that they're not alone and that other people have done this before them. And so it's kind of our job to hook them up with the resources and the tools that they need and to meet other like-minded families to provide encouragement.
Mm-hmm. It's a real mind shift, I think, for people to start thinking about taking over the control of planning around their housing and not just sitting in and waiting for a funded vacancy to arrive. So I think it can be really empowering and also scary at the same time. So like Amber said, we're there to try and guide people through that process and take help out a little bit with those fears. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So do you actually help them create plans or is it more just resources?
So we'll provide access to the resources, and but we can do that step by step. So while we won't create a full housing plan for somebody, they can certainly connect with us on their steps throughout the journey so that they don't have to feel overwhelmed with taking a whole housing plan on at once. They can just come to us for guidance. So what's step one? Here's the information, here's some resources, go start that.
If somebody did want a more fully realized plan and needed a little more hand-holding, so to speak, then if it's available in their area, we would recommend that they use some of their passport funding to hire an individualized planner. And then they could go that route. And that would also incorporate housing as well in their whole life goal plan.
So how do people access you? Is it through the DSO only, or how does someone come to you for support?
Yeah, so anybody who has been deemed eligible through Development Services Ontario can access the Housing Navigator. We don't really have a wait list, so they can just call their regional Development Services Ontario office. They can get that access information from the internet, from the website, or from calling 211. And they can just call their navigator up and share their story of where they're at and what they're looking for assistance.
Great. So I understand that you've developed, or you've been working on tools for Toolkit, which are now available for folks. And I guess this podcast is really to get into sort of the beginning stages. And I know in the guide we've labeled it as sort of the exploration phase. But I know that many people may be coming into this piece and not really feel like they fit into a specific step or section. So I guess at the beginning, when people come and they kind of, what sort of things should they be looking at, or what resources should they be thinking about when they start their housing plan?
Mm-hmm. I think the first step, if they haven't already done it, is to really just take a look at what the vision is. What's your ideal? If you could, you know, that whole magic wand question, if I could wave a magic wand, what would your ideal housing look like? What kind of supports would you need? Are you living alone or with roommates, with family or friends, in a house or in an apartment, in social housing or in a condo? There's so many different options to consider. So the toolkit does have tools to help guide people through their visioning exercises, several different types of tools for whatever fits their personality style best, or the way they like to do work best.
It also comes down to where people are at in their community. Like, do they already have a meaningful life that's already begun? And do you really want to take them out, you know, to go and find affordable housing? Or do you, if you haven't got those things in place, then do you look for housing first and then create your community around it?
Hmm. So I'm assuming a lot of that might be determined by finances. Does that play a part at the beginning?
Absolutely. I think you would have to have a pretty good understanding of what your budget is, what you can afford, because there's not really any affordable housing out there. People really can't afford to live on their own, even though ideally it would be wonderful. Everybody deserves the right to live on their own. But with ODSP, it's not sufficient to pay for rent. So shared housing options are a big suggestion when thinking about what your housing model is going to look like.
And also applying for social housing, like when we talk about the bricks and mortar, putting your application into social housing, because there's long wait lists there. And you can always say no if you figured something else out in the meantime, or you've decided that that's just not what you want. Still put your name on the list, and you can always say no when it comes up. But the wait lists for social housing are anywhere between 3 and 6 years. So you might as well be on both lists.
So I guess a lot of people have apps for everything. There's an app for that. How does technology play a role in sort of the beginning phases? What sort of things should people be thinking about?
Yeah, so within our toolkit, we have a large library of technology options that people can investigate. It's certainly not all the technology that's available out there on the market. It's just really to get people starting to think about where technology could help with community safety, or with teaching cooking and cleaning skills, or safety monitoring. And where technology really fills a nice gap is overnight supports. So oftentimes we'll put things in place on a just-in-case basis, where you might be paying somebody to stay overnight with somebody and they are never needed as a support person. So if that's a situation that could be possible, then why not look at technology and where technology monitoring can help with that. So there's all different types of technology that can help fill those gaps to help somebody to become more and more independent within the community.
Amber, what about supports, building support teams? I'm sure that's a critical step at the beginning. What does that look like?
Yeah, so there's different kinds of supports that that families would look at. Typically, we hear about the formal support or the paid support in somebody's life, and that could be an agency worker, a respite worker, a teacher, a coach. And then we have what we call natural supports, and that would be family, friends, acquaintances, or it could be a former paid support, somebody that is no longer hired by you but has chosen to, you know, to remain in the person's life because they've built a great friendship. And so you want to look at any kind of support that you already have and try and leverage that and figure out how this could grow and become a long-term sustainable support in your life. Now, you know, it's, of course it's easier if your family member is more independent and has a lower level of need, but if somebody requires 24/7 care, then you probably would want to turn to your local health integrated network, so the LHINs, and see if you could access some supports through them.
So the toolkit will help guide people through those generic type of supports that are open to the entire community, whether that's through the Ministry of Health or potentially through the Ministry of Education, other types of public services that are available that aren't necessarily strictly for people with developmental disabilities.
So how do you go about structuring that? Because I know you were mentioning, you know, someone who they may just have a connection to, but how do you structure that as a part of your plan? Is there like a formal form that you kind of build up to that has all of that on there, or how does that
look
like?
Yes, there will be a template as part of the toolkit where you can, much like budgeting your finances, it's the same way you're allotting your time. So you want to look down and see what does a typical day look like for your family member and figure out where the high points of the day are, you know, where you need support. If you're looking at a supported independent living model, like a SIL model, then you may only require 2 hours a day. Or it could be even as low as 2 hours a week, right? Just to check on somebody, make sure they have food in their fridge. Like Tracy said, with technology, you can eliminate a lot of that hands-on support. So there will be a template to help you figure that out, and then you might be surprised that you don't need as much support as you thought you did by utilizing your blend. It's best to have a blend of, you know, natural and paid supports, I would imagine.
Utilizing an independent facilitator as well can really help somebody to grow that community life. That can help significantly with a housing plan as well. You know, if you can rely on a neighbor to be your what if or those just in case, then that's fantastic. That's a huge cost savings. But not only that, it's nice social capital. You know, friends are, we all could use more friends.
Yeah. And you wouldn't want to replace that with technology, right?
Absolutely.
You need that loving support still from face to face.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So I guess what other things would you recommend people start thinking about or build into the beginning of their plan that they haven't done already?
Probably financial planning is a big one. You know, you need to start thinking about that really early on. Like, have you, you know, applied for your RDSPs, Henson trusts in place, you know, estate planning, that kind of thing. I think it's really never too early to start thinking about that and to be realistic. And then, you know, the other side of that too is the sustainability planning. So once you have your supports in place, how do you make that last after you're gone and you're no longer able to care for your loved one or be a part of their life? So that's where you might turn towards microboards or arojas or, you know, support circles, that kind of thing, where you have a legal entity that's in place where you have a mini board and people have a certain role to play in the care and well-being of that person's life plan. Mm-hmm.
So what does that look like? So if you had an example that you want to share with people, what would a micro board look like? Is it just different individuals on it? Are they all different depending on the person? I'm assuming.
Usually they're comprised of no more than half of family members, and then the other half would be, I would imagine you would want to draw someone who has like a good understanding of finances and banking, that sort of thing, and it can be from any walk of life really, but you just want to have a good blend of people that will bring all their expertise to the table, and that like any board, if they leave the board, then they're required to find a replacement, just so that it's ongoing and sustainable.
Yeah, the nice thing about a microboard is that it also can it can allow a place for finances to flow through, so they could become the employer of passport workers, for example, that sort of thing. So it alleviates that pressure upon a family member to do that. So that's another reason why people will use a incorporated microboard. But even just developing those community circles and it not being a real formal, like a microboard or an Aroha would be, just developing those community circles to bring more and more people surrounding the individual, and providing those natural supports and really supporting the family and giving the family peace of mind that should there come a time when they're unable to kind of orchestrate the housing plan or the housing needs, that there's others that have been involved from the beginning and understand the wishes of everybody and can help to continue to guide that through.
Is there some sort of a checklist or a tool that somebody could kind of check off? What do I already have in preparation for building this plan that they could utilize? I think sometimes people feel overwhelmed. It's a lot to think of all at once. And sometimes you want to kind of feel like you've checked off certain pieces.
Right. Yeah, there is an inventory checklist as part of the resources in there, which can help guide you through where you're at today. So have you... have you applied for your passport? Are you in with the DSO? Have you applied for social housing? Kind of guiding you through those first steps. Do you have your vision? That sort of thing. So yeah, that's definitely a part of our resource kit.
So can you tell us a little bit more about, or maybe give us an example of someone who's just started the process and what that kind of looked like for them?
So a family that I have worked with has started working on the housing plan. So they've started with getting their vision in place and really what it is that at the end of the day, their son wants to experience. Now, the best plans are not made in crisis. The best plans are made over a period of time. So this mom that I've connected with, she's planning over a 2-year period with her son. So that's the end goal. So they've started already with setting some technology up inside her home so that she can do some trial and error to see where his skill set is. And also that gives her a little bit of respite too, being able to leave the home and get some time on her own and knowing that her son is safe at home. So they've developed what their vision is going to look like for him. It's an apartment on his own and no roommate, but friends nearby. So he knows what community he wants to be in because he wants to be near his circle of support. So near his church and near where he experiences some sports, bowling, I think it is, that sort of thing. So he knows very clearly the neighborhood that he wants to be in. So they've done their applications for social housing, knowing that there's that wait list. They're trialing some technology. And he's continuing to build his circle of support, those natural supports. So really connecting closely, going to church without mom to get those connections with people at church and at the sports that he engages in as well.
So I guess to that point, how do you identify that there's a gap in your support team? Like, what do you do if you found, oh no, there's at this time, or how does that kind of look for folks and what can they do about it?
So the first objective really is to find where there might be some gaps. So once there's kind of the strengths list developed and then kind of going through what a schedule looks like in a week, and then from there you're able to determine where the person needs supports and there may or may not be supports. So identifying if the person really needs it to be a paid support and why, and then what are some options to find that paid support. So for example, somebody who has health concerns, it's not just through passport dollars that they can obtain support, but also they can apply to the LHINs, used to be called Community Care Access Center, so they can do application there for some potential PSW supports. So there's some really good things out there in the community as well that everybody can access. It's not just people with developmental disability.
And I think it all comes back to is that creativity factor and not being afraid to think differently about what your support might look like. So another form of unpaid supports to bridge that gap, you can look towards, you know, students that are in the developmental services sector that maybe are in their second year of, you know, college, and they also need affordable housing, right? So if you have a basement that you can turn into a legal suite, then you could actually have a student come and live for no rent in exchange for providing soft supports to your son or daughter and mentor them, provide, you know, companionship, get them involved in the community, teach them really, you know, needed life skills to live a more independent life. There's also senior citizens that are, you know, that still want to be really active in their community, but maybe are overhoused, you know, like they're living on their own in a really big house. They're looking to downsize and they would love an opportunity. They may have, you know, some sort of social background. They could have been a retired nurse, something like that. And they might jump at the opportunity to have an affordable place to live while also providing the supports that I mentioned.
Wow, that's very creative and things that I'm sure not everyone would be naturally thinking about when they're trying to develop the plan.
So one of the things that the toolkit offers is a bunch of these success stories. So we've been gathering from not only within our own regions in Ontario, but also across the world, some success stories of things that have really worked well for people, so that in that creative zen people are getting into, they're not having to recreate the wheel. There's some motivation or some inspiration there from these success stories, and it really helps people to start shifting their mindset on that and taking some ownership to the housing plans, and that person-centered housing is so important. And this, although it feels scary at times, definitely gives the opportunity for people to make their housing what they want it to be very, very person-centered and not, you know, fitting into a service system, but creating the system that they want.
Exactly. And that's what I really like about this role, because it's almost like we're, you know, families feel like they don't have a lot of power, right? They're waiting for something that may never come, may never be available to them. So we're able to give a little bit of power back to them by saying it's okay to think differently and that we have to be realistic, and you know, that you may never receive the funding or ministry-funded spot. So it's kind of, in a way, it's nice to be able to have those conversations with families, and they do have those aha moments where it seems so simple, but I hadn't actually thought of that. So a lot of what we do is, have you thought of this? Have you thought of that? And you'd be surprised how often they come away from, you know, a phone conversation saying, well, thank you. I didn't even consider that I could do that. I'm definitely going to look into that now.
Yeah, it's really helping people moving from feeling just victimized or powerless and empowering them with options and success stories of others that have walked the journey before them.
And successful too, that they've actually done it. So it's helpful to see, you know, sometimes you hear stories, but you never really know the outcome.
Right.
But to have a sustainable model that's worked for somebody and that could possibly work for someone else is pretty amazing.
That's right.
And like you were saying, sometimes you're so busy in your own life and doing the day to day that you don't have time to really consider or think about creative aspects of this. Right. So it's great to have a resource such as yourselves to kind of go to, and the toolkit to kind of find new and innovative ideas. Yeah. and where to go for that kind of support.
And what I really love about a lot of the stories I've heard from families who have walked this journey is they're not just sharing their successes, but they're sharing the challenges along the path too. Mm-hmm. So it's not all, you know, sunshine and roses. These are some of the challenges, but hearing somebody else's challenges helps you to mitigate that in your own plans as well, and know that, you know, one of my favorite quotes when I'm talking to families is that if the plan fails, change the plan, not the end goal, right? So just to be flexible that way.
That's great. Well, is there anything else that you'd like to tell families?
I think one question that has come up recently at a parent group that I attended, they were worried that by creating their own individualized housing plan, that it would affect their place on the DSO registry. So I think we should point out that that is not the case. And while it's very important to notify the DSO and keep them updated of any major, you know, life changes, and changes in your needs and your situation, but that if you do decide to go ahead and create your own housing plan, you will still be on the registry list, and if and when the time comes, you will still be offered a spot, as it's.
And you might find that what you've created is the perfect solution and that you want to stay.
And that would be wonderful. Exactly. Yeah. It may be better than anything you ever thought you could have had through the typical fashion.
I think one other thing that's important for everybody listening to understand is planning in crisis is challenging. So don't wait for there to be a need for a housing plan. Start planning now, because once you're able to start identifying where some gaps are, there's a lot of learning opportunities. So over the next, you know, couple years, you could be working on learning some of those skill sets, and really allowing the person then to vision what they want their housing plan to look like as well, and perhaps even trying different types of housing. That's always been a difficult thing for somebody to choose. Well, what kind of house do you want to live in? Do you want roommates? Do you not want roommates? But if they haven't experienced that, it's hard to make a decision, right? You know, I didn't know I wanted a dog till I got a dog, that kind of thing. So it's never too early to start planning. Certainly, as soon as somebody turns 18, please connect with us and let us help you start thinking about what a housing plan, even if it's 10 years down the road, you can start that plan now.
So how do they get a hold of you then? How do they get a hold of all the resources and that information?
So the library of resources that we're calling the toolkit is available on the dsontario.ca website. And so they can go directly there, or if they want to speak to a housing navigator, they can find our contact information on the website, or they can call 211 and ask for their local DSO.
Great. Thank you so much for your insight and your information. And we hope to hear from you both again in another podcast and help people explore more creative opportunities for them, for their housing needs. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Our pleasure.
Us.